Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And we're pleased to welcome Scott Corley, Belmont Athletic Director, to the show now. Scott, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining us.
Another day trying to figure stuff out, but it's all good. How are you guys holding up?
Doing great. What have you been up to during this kind of crazy time that we've been going through?
You know, actually been pretty busy, and none of it's doing real a lot of fun stuff, Joe. It's, you know, looking at budgets, looking at, trying to get our arms around this eligibility issue, trying to get our arms around, you know, the impact of the NCAA distribution cuts, and then just trying to make sure, you know, obviously our coaches are staying engaged with their teams and players, and I'm trying to do a good job keeping them informed and, you know, having weekly conference calls, things like that. Obviously, you know, trying to do the same with my staff just to make sure everyone's, you know, trying to stay engaged as much as they can. You know, we're trying to work our social media angles as best we can, you know, similar to what you guys are trying to do. And, you know, just trying as best I can from a remote situation is just keeping the department focused and keeping, everyone informed as best that I can as to what the landscape looks like. And as you can imagine, that's pretty difficult to do because the landscape's pretty blurry at this point, and there's so many factors out of our control and things like that. So, not going to lie, it's been challenging, but we're certainly trying to do the best we can.
So the Division I Council vote, Scott, on Monday, were you surprised at all by that? Is this what you expected, and what is the specific impact on Belmont?
Yeah, not surprised where it came out. Heck, they basically painted themselves into that corner, you know, when they first announced it, 10 days ago, that the seniors deserve the eligibility relief. So, you know, if anything, you know, they tried to do the best they can to give as much flexibility to the individual schools, but at the same time, they kind of pushed it back to us to be the ones be either the good guys or the bad guys, right? And so, you know, I think we're all trying to do the analysis. I mean, you know, some of it for us is just how many of the seniors are truly going to want to come back. You know, obviously at a place like Belmont private school with tuition that's pretty high, you know, all of these seniors are on partial scholarships for the most part. And so they've got to then decide, is it worth from their financial situation as a family to pay an extra year just to remain eligible for another season. And so we're obviously going through that analysis. I think we've got 32 seniors that would qualify. I think, Joe, we've had 9 that have definitely said they will not come back, and that was initially. And for the most part, that's because they've got jobs and want to, you know, get on with their careers. The remainder, it was almost like, well, I need more information. Let's wait and see. And so we're trying to, you know, get our arms around all that and then have those conversations, you know, because some of it, too, is I think the farther you get away from it, more of these seniors may realize, you know, it's time to move on and I'm not coming back. So we're trying to have those conversations, but in general, you know, we still haven't made any decisions on what we're going to do at Belmont, probably like a lot of schools across the country, just trying to figure out what we can do from a financial perspective.
Yeah, that's interesting that 23 would still be leaving it open. Of course, I assume also right now, Scott, I mean, just in society, it's harder to get a job, right? It's harder to – you're not interviewing for jobs, right? So I'd imagine just – society right now probably puts more people in limbo than they would be otherwise, obviously.
I think that's a great point. And again, you know, a lot of these kids have to factor that in. And we did literally have one of our players say, well, if I can get a job offer, you know, I'm interning this summer. If I can get a job offer, I'm going to take it because I don't know how bad the economy is going to get, and therefore I'm not going to come back. I mean, it's all across the board. You know, obviously, again, a lot of kids didn't even get to participate outdoor track and field. They didn't even get to participate at all. So, you know, more of those kids are probably hungry to get a chance to compete again. But, yeah, there's just so much uncertainty out there. There's, you know, so much uncertainty. Are the fall sports going to be impacted? Things like that. So there's a lot to go. And so I think in some cases it may be best just to kind of, you know, slow down a little bit. Let's get all our facts in order. Let's make sure, hey, what do we want to do as an institution? Because obviously Belmont, like everyone else in the country, they're trying to look at the overall impact of COVID-19 to the university. And we're just a small part of the university. So, you know, there's a lot of larger decisions that are going on that will or will not impact athletics.
Scott Corley, Belmont Athletic Director, on the line with us. And Scott, you mentioned kind of the uncertainty that we all have moving forward here. I imagine in terms of an athletic director, not just at Belmont, but all around the country, you know, trying to find what that balance is going to be like between new players coming in and the scholarships that they have, and also weighing that with the extra year of eligibility, that's going to be a challenge to kind of make all of that math fit in together. What do you think that challenge is going to be like for programs throughout the country?
Well, I think you're going to have a lot of hard conversations. The coaches are with a lot of these seniors, because my understanding is the incoming freshmen, because they've signed their national letter of intent, that you're obligated to provide that. You can't sit and go back and necessarily negotiate with those freshmen and say, hey, I know I promised you 60%, but under these circumstances, would you come in at 30%? And so, you know, again, a lot of it just comes down to what the financial resources are at these individual schools to say, hey, can I take on an additional, and I'm making this number up, you know, $600,000 of scholarship. And then it gets even more complicated. Just how do you manage the rosters? How do you limit the travel squad sizes, which could impact how freshmen perceive their opportunity at that university? You know, so it is extremely complicated. You know, on the surface, obviously, it looks we want to do the right thing for these seniors who didn't get a chance to play, but there are going to be a lot of details and dynamics and some tough conversations that we'll probably likely have across the nation.
So there's this NCAA Student Assistant Fund, which apparently you're laughing already. So I think I have an idea of your answer, but do you have any feel for what that is and how much help that might be to you?
That will be very little help. That was part of the distributions that got cut by almost 70%. And so while I appreciate the D1 Council offering that up as a potential opportunity to support scholarships, you know, for most of us, that is going to do very little to provide much help, because those funds have historically been accounted for what they were originally designed for. And now you cut that by 70%. That doesn't leave a whole lot. I mean, I think that's the other point that, and I think most people understand it, but I mean, a lot of institutions relied on these NCAA distributions to support their operating budgets. And when you're getting those cut by $500,000 to $700,000, you know, that's a double whammy. So you're getting it cut on one end, and then the NCAA is allowing you to add additional costs from the scholarship eligibility perspective. And that's going to be difficult for a lot of institutions throughout the country.
Well, Scott, obviously a lot of things going on right now that in the long run are more important than sports. But one of the things people around here locally were looking forward to was Belmont in the NCAA tournament, winning 12 games in a row to close out their season, in Casey Alexander's first year, winning the OVC championship. What did you make of Casey Alexander's first year at Belmont, and what did you make of kind of the opportunity the team would have had going into the NCAA tournament?
Well, I've mentally prepared that I would be preparing for the Final Four right now. So, you know, I can at least play that game in my mind, right?
And just a short drive to Atlanta would have been very
that's
convenient.
That's right. It would have been great. Look, it was a great first year for Casey, and I knew it. You know, I knew he was up for the challenge. I mean, he's just a really, really good basketball coach, really, really good leader of young men, and just a great, you know, he gets it both how to deal with people internally and externally, and to watch him operate on a day-to-day basis was really fun. The staff he put around him was first class and brought a lot of continuity. So, you know, I felt really good going into the year. Obviously, we had, you know, the question marks of how do you replace a Dylan Windler and a Kevin McClain and all that they brought to the team, you know, last year. And in some cases, we got off to a little slow start non-conference by Belmont standards, probably lost some games that we thought we could win. But then to see them put it together, and obviously we got off to a slow start within the OVC, but they were playing some really, really good basketball, guys. And I think y'all know it and y'all saw it. And, you know, I felt really, you know, obviously confidence is a big part of athletics. And when you get on a 12-game winning streak, you're going to be playing with a high level of confidence where you think every shot you're going to shoot is going in. I think they understood the importance of Nick Musinski and running the offense through him. And then you've got Grayson Murphy and all that he does, the intangibles that he brings. And then the way Tyler Scanlon just fit in so well with this team. And obviously the way he was playing at the end of the year, it would have been really, really fun to see. And that's all you can ask for is a chance. And that's what makes it so tough is we just didn't get that chance.
No doubt. We're with Belmont Athletic Director Scott Corley. Last thing for you, Scott, and I'm glad we're talking about sports stuff, and I want to have a more, you know, a more optimistic tone as we look forward to next year. I feel like the OVC might be unbelievable, and I'm thinking in particular about you guys, of course, bringing back the bulk of that team's a lot of great sophomores. Jeff Goodman has Austin Peay in his top 25. You know, Terry Taylor, Jordan Adams, terrific players, and we know Murray State's going to be good. How strong does this league look to you next season?
Very strong. I mean, it's impressive the amount of young talent that's in this conference and really a lot of good coaches. I mean, what Matt Figgers has done at Austin Peay is phenomenal. The talent that he's been able to bring in, and he coaches them really well where they play hard. They defend so hard. And then Matt's got it going at Murray State. And it's going to be a battle. I mean, it's going to be really exciting. You know, maybe we can get back to the level where two teams can get into the tournament, because there's going to be some quality wins amongst our three programs, in my opinion, in the non-conference. And then, you know, we may beat each other up a little bit in conference, but I think when you looked at 2 years ago when we got the at-large, it was because the OVC had four really, really good teams at the top, and there's no reason to believe next year it won't be the same. And so it's pretty it's pretty encouraging. At the same time, for us, you know, it's pretty daunting to know we're going to have to keep battling those guys. But I love our nucleus. I love what we've got coming back, and it should be a lot of fun.
Scott Corley, Belmont Athletic Director, has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Scott, thanks so much for taking time to join us this morning. Wish you and your family all the best through this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Glad to do it, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
y'all. Take care.
Absolutely. Scott Corley has been our guest here on Morning Drive. We'll react to more of what he had to say in that interview next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And Joe, we just had Scott Corley, Belmont Athletics Director, on with us in the last segment. And a lot of things kind of standing out to me there in terms of what he was talking about with the NCAA announcing yesterday that they were extending an extra year of eligibility for spring sports athletes. And Joe, just based off what I heard there from Scott Corley, it's going to be really interesting to see, number one, like if you're a senior, like how are you viewing what's going on right now? Like, let's say you don't have much of a prospect to go play pro sports in your respective sport. Like, you look at what's going on right now in the world and the economy and all these different things, like how much, if you're a senior, are you weighing, do I want to come back and play next year just to say that I got my senior season in, or do I want to go right into the workforce right now? That was kind of an element about this conversation that I hadn't thought of yet, but it seems like that's certainly a reality, at least at Belmont, based on what Scott Corley had to say there, and I'm sure throughout the country as well.
Well, exactly. And how many spring athletes have full scholarships? Very, very few. Now, of course, Mississippi State fans will say all the Vanderbilt baseball players have full scholarships. Yes, of course, yes. They're all on full scholarship. They're all getting $200,000 in salary. But no, in reality, very few spring athletes anywhere are on full scholarship. So it does kind of, first, we talked to Scott Corley, so it depends on the institution, too. You know, the tuition at a private institution is different than, you know, at a large state school. And then you got the job market. And you've also got the fact that right now, it can't be easy to get a job. You know, so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got to figure out, okay, if I do come back, then what's the financial impact of that? How much can I get? You can't, you know, you can get the same or less. And I think in a lot of cases, it's going to be less. I mean, sometimes you may have just an exceptional athlete who makes such a difference to a team that, you know, it's going to be the same. But like Scott Corley pointed out, and it's no surprise, I mean, there's no number on that student assistance fund, but it's not going to be much. I think it's going to be an afterthought. It's going to be negligible. So that doesn't really matter. So it's a really complicated issue. I think Scott also brought up a good point, you know, with the track athletes who hadn't even had a chance to do anything. Like, if you've spent years working on whatever it is that you do in track and field, and you're a senior, and this is, you know, this is your chance to whatever your goal is, you know,
yeah,
you've got a personal record, you've got a league, you want to be All-American, whatever it is, you know, and you didn't get a chance at all to compete or participate, then I can see why there would be a draw to do that. And then it's tied to education too. Well, if you're getting your degree now, so what's the educational benefit of coming back? Is there a master's program that you can work on, you know, another bachelor's degree? A lot of things factored in. At least baseball and softball players had a little bit of time, a few weeks of playing games that they got to experience, you know, part of a senior season.
And the other part of this, and Scott Corley brought this up as well, like the freshmen coming in that have signed their letters of intent. I mean, if you're a university, you've got to honor the scholarships that you've promised them in those letters. So that's the other part of it. If you're, like, if you're a coach right now and one of your senior players is wanting to come back and give it another go for an extra year of eligibility, I mean, those are going to be tough conversations to have where you're looking around and you're just like, look, man, like, we don't mind you coming back, but, I mean, there's just limited money that we're going to be able to toss around here. That part of it's interesting as well. Then also, if you're a freshman, like, you know, you sign these letter of intents just thinking that everything is going to take place as normal, and then all of a sudden you've got players that you think are on the way out potentially coming back in. That could affect your playing time as well. Maybe your opportunity, maybe that's a big reason why you chose to go there and attend that school to begin with. It's just a whole lot of different things that these athletic departments are going to have to deal with now that this extra year of eligibility has been given. I agree with giving it out. I think it's the right move to do, but it does create kind of a myriad of different problems that you have to work through if you're an athletic department and certainly a coach.
Yeah, that's an important nugget, that you can't change what the freshmen coming in were going to get, because I'm sure in some cases there'd be coaches saying, man, this senior coming back means a lot, and if I could get this freshman to take a little less, but you can't do it. And you're right also on the opportunity for playing time. Now, you could look around, and you're going to see every school is in the same situation. So,
right,
you know, you may be thinking of another place or whatever, but they might have the same sort of situation with seniors coming back. I think when it's all said and done, I think it'll be a pretty low percentage of athletes who come back and opt for that, you know, extra year. And I'm talking just about the seniors. You know, again, everyone's getting another year of eligibility. But I think it'll be a pretty low number of seniors coming back because, again, spring sports, for the most part, and if other than like baseball, really, for the most part, these are athletes who are college athletes who are going to be professionals in something other than sports, right? They're getting their degrees. They're going to move on to other things. Now, baseball, locally, we can look at Vanderbilt. I just assume everybody on that roster is going to be in the majors someday.
Yes.
How much Tim Corbin has it rolling. Like the two seniors there, Ty Duvall and Harrison Ray, maybe Ty Duvall could think about coming back. But I think those guys will probably be in professional, at some level of professional baseball next summer. So it's not even a factor in terms of seniors for a program like that. Most sports, you're looking to go out and get in the job market. Now, of course, the problem now, what's the job market look like? What's the interview situation look like? Everything has been put on hold. It's a mess is what it is.
Yeah, and, from a Belmont standpoint, when it comes to the basketball team, like I was really looking forward to seeing what they could have done in the tournament. Obviously, the seeding never came out, and we didn't know exactly what their matchup was going to be. But I really feel for a guy like, Tyler Scanlon, who went to Belmont, and this was his shot to get in the tournament with them. He had the big dramatic game winner against Murray State, and that team had all sorts of momentum heading into the NCAA tournament. I would have been really curious to see what the Bruins could have done had the tournament taken place.
Oh, yeah. No, very red-hot team after they had some January struggles. They lost to Murray and Austin Peay on the road. They had a shocking home loss to SIU Edwardsville, and kind of looked like, okay, well, this team maybe just doesn't quite have all the right things in place. And by the end there, to beat that Murray State team, and I was there that night in a building absolutely packed with Murray State fans. Evansville is a good place for the OVC tournament. It's also guaranteed Murray State home games.
Yep.
Okay, every year you have it. And Belmont had not won the tournament since it moved to Evansville. And so to go do that in that atmosphere against a team like that, and a really good Murray team, told me I do not want to be, the three or the four facing up against that team. So someone maybe lucked out there in that first round. And, I think the idea of a Belmont team at some point being able to pull off an upset and then do it again and get to like a Sweet 16, it's not out of the realm of possibility one of these years, and this could have been that team.
And to your point, the OVC, you look at it next year with Belmont and Austin Peay, Murray State there as well. All of a sudden, this league, it's not going to be like a top league in the country or anything like that, but the top part of the league especially has got some pretty good depth to it.
Right. Belmont gets the at-large 2 years ago, and like Scott Corley told us, the very top of the league was so good. And of course, you've got to do work against Power 5 schools in the non-league. You have to. Belmont that year went out and won at UCLA, for example. But I think next year it's going to be really, really tough. Now, I don't know if I buy Jeff Goodman putting Austin Peay in the top 25, but I think it's cool that he did, and it shows you there is some national respect out there for teams in this league. Terry Taylor is the reigning player of the year. Jordan Adams, I think Jordan Adams is going to be in the NBA, and he's a freshman guard for Austin Peay.
Yep.
So those two, and then what Belmont has, all the key guys coming back other than, Tyler Scanlon is a loss for sure, but loads of talent coming back and experience now, and what Murray State's going to be every year. They're going to be really good. So I think next year could be a year where you see one of those teams that doesn't win it in the end get an at-large.
When we come back, Predators TV analyst and former Preds goaltender Chris Mason will join us. That's coming up next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week we bring in our good friend Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, former Preds goaltender, driven by Freeland Chevrolet, also brought to you by Smoky Mountain Tops, the exclusive partner of the Nashville Predators. Visit SmokyMountainTops.com. See, Mace, what's going on, my man?
Not too much. I'm actually just in the middle of when you guys called, I was drawing a sketching out a Spider-Man on a canvas for my son's room.
Wow. That's yeah. very nice. I didn't know you had that artistic ability about you.
Yeah, it's well, I used to do it when I was a kid. I used to draw goalies and goalie masks, and you know, every goalie geeks out about their goalie mask. So it's just something I haven't done for a long time, and yeah, getting back at it, you know, finding things to do.
Well, the videos are still coming hot and heavy from you, so you're still doing a wonderful job on that front.
Why, thank you. We're still trying to find some different things to do, and Skillsy's going out there too, and he's putting out some good stuff, so we're just going back and forth and trying to keep some stuff out there and give you know, give people a couple of minutes of entertainment at the very least if we can.
Yeah, like I love – oh, go ahead, Robbie, sorry.
I was going to say, see, Mace, I have to put Joe Rexroad on blast here for a second. Also Munson as well, because I don't know if you've seen this, see, Mace, but we're doing this bracket here at ESPN 102.5 The Game, which, by the way, if you're listening now, you can vote on. Voting now open in the Jeff Fisher region. So go to 102.5 The Game on Twitter and get that done. But Shea Weber, basically the bracket is 64 athletes in the history of Nashville.
Yep.
In the last 30 years, we're trying to determine the best one. And Shea Weber is a 2 seed. In this bracket. And Chris Mason, you would not have believed the disrespect shown by Joe Rexroad and Munson earlier in the show, having Shea Weber going out in the second round. I was appalled. I'm going to give you this opportunity to defend your boy. We know you're very close with Shea Weber, and explain to the masses what his impact was on hockey in Nashville in his time with the Predators.
Well, so who did he lose out to? I got to know that.
Kevin, yeah, right. Can you throw that out there first, Robbie, well, before you start
accusing
us?
That's not important, but he lost to Kevin Byard of the Titans, who's a 7 seed.
Well, that's – hello? Oh, no.
You there, C-Mace? I think we may have lost C-Mace momentarily.
You have shocked him. You've shocked him with your revelation.
I zapped the space-time continuum there. There's so much disrespect that's been thrown out to Shea Weber that C-Mace was outraged and his phone broke.
Well, no, he was just like, oh, man, I can't believe you're going to have me beef against my two friends here over a pick that's probably not even that far-fetched.
I can't wait to tattle on you for your Pecorine disrespect.
Yeah, I can't wait either.
We'll flip it around.
I at least had him in the final four. You had Shea Weber out in the second round.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes these brackets are tough. You run into an unfairly tough matchup as a high seed, and, you know, it gets you. I mean, it happens every year in March.
I couldn't believe it. It was just so much disrespect shown there. And I'm sure once we get C-Mates back on the phone, he's just going to lay into the both of you. I was going to leave out the fact that Kevin Byard was the opponent because it didn't matter to me. It's just that's irrelevant information. Shea Weber is not getting put out of the second round.
We might have to bleep C-Mace. He's going to be so mad at us.
Well, let's bring Chris Mason back to the phone here. We got him back joining us. And Chris Mason, obviously, you were appalled just as I was as the disrespect that's been tossed out there by Shea Weber.
I was going to say something I might regret on air, so I had to get myself out of this situation before I regretted did said something I regret. But no, I'm just kidding. I got cut off there. But, yeah, I think Shea Weber, the reason why, you know, I think people – it's tough to do eras, I think, because it's so current with Baird opposed to Weber. You know, Shea Weber, I think, was a captain for the team for, man, I don't know how long. Like, he brought this team, I think, into relevance. Him and Pekka kind of together, especially with his leadership ability. He's still, you hear the guys that are the leaders on the team now. You hear Ryan Ellis, Roman Josi, all the guys that played with him talk about the impact that Shea had on them. And I think he really, honestly, brought this team. You know, in his younger years, he was part of those good teams that we had back with J.P. Dumont and Correa and Sullivan. And then, you know, he took it to the next level. And you know, it's unfortunate that right before, you know, this team goes to the Stanley Cup Finals when it was probably getting at its best, all the young core of guys that, you know, grew and learned under him, you know, took off and started going on a pretty good run there for a few years. And then we had this year, which was, you know, whatever this year was, but it was starting to get pretty good. But I think the impact of Shea Weber on this franchise and this city, he's got to be fighting in the final of that bracket.
Well, I can't sit here and argue with you, C-Maze. I will say, though, that I had Pecorine in the final and almost winning, and Robbie puts him out in the final four to Eddie George. So, I mean, if we're going to tattle on each other here, I think it has to go both ways.
Robbie, poor Pekka. Just could you imagine the heartbreak, the look in his puppy dog eyes if you found
I don't want to imagine that. It will hurt my soul. But at least I had him in the final four and not out in the second round. I mean, that's disrespectful.
I looked at those brackets, though, man. Now it's tough. It would be tough when you get, you know, when you start whittling down. You're like, you know, they're all such good candidates.
I got to ask you, too, Chris. Now, your videos we talked about, I really like Cool Guy a lot. I'm a big fan of Cool Guy. But I mean, this cowboy thing you got going on, I thought that was pretty good. Is this a new character for you, or have I missed the cowboy guy in the past?
No, this is new. I'm trying to, this is this app, and I just made up this stupid voice that I thought sounded like a cowboy, so I just did that little thing and tried to, I don't know, do a little PSA from my cowboy. I don't even have a name for him yet, but Cowboy Chris for now. But
I like it.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see what comes next. We'll see if I can keep going with him. Maybe bring cool guy back in, and or start a new one. I got a song I've got to do, but I just got to finish off the lyrics and then make sure that it's not too embarrassing where my family won't disown me. But they really have no choice because they're stuck with me here. So.
C-Mace, we spent a lot of time earlier this year talking about the goal that Pecorine scored. Some people may not know, you too have also been a goal scorer at the NHL level at the goaltender position. What do you remember about your goal that you scored at the NHL level?
Well, I remember that I didn't know that I scored. So I was the last one to touch it. We were playing against the Phoenix Coyotes, as they were called back in the day, and one of their guys shot the puck in from just inside the blue line, I think, and I made a blocker save, and it went to the corner. And then it ended up on the stick of Jeff Sanderson, and they had obviously there's a delayed penalty, so their goalie was going to the bench for an extra attacker, and then Sanderson tried to pass it to the D-man pinching in, and it bounced over his stick right in the back of the net. So I ended up getting credit for that goal, which is pretty crazy. And I got credit for one almost exactly the same way for the Milwaukee Admirals. So it was almost identical. I think it happened on the other side, though, is where the puck got shot in from their team. So pretty crazy. So it's not as cool. You know, I just got credit for a goal. I didn't actually score a goal.
Well, C-Mace, even though, like, you go back and look at the video of the goal that you scored, and Wayne Gretzky, who was the coach of the Coyotes at the time, is just sitting on the bench waving his hands maniacally about how it shouldn't have counted. So the greatest hockey player of all time was trying to take your goal away from you. That just adds to the disrespect that we've continued to see today here on the show.
Yeah, I think it really does. And I saw him at the Winter Classic in St. Louis a couple of years ago, and I forgot I was too nervous to talk around him. But I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, you have a million goals as a hockey player, and then you're not going to let me have the one goal that I'm only going to get credit for in my career, and you have to make a big stink about it. But it counted anyway, so I got the great one on that night.
Yeah, at some point you've got to, like, talk a little trash about that to him, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've been around Wayne Gretzky before, and when he was the coach, and I was too nervous to go up and say hi and just tell him how much, you know, I loved watching him when I was a kid because I grew up in Red Deer, which is now south of Edmonton, and then I didn't do it then when I played, and then in the Winter Classic, my spot, I got to sit right beside him when we did the practice the day before, and to hear him, you know, talk to, like, the other guys on the team, and just the way he was like chirping guys and, like, making fun of guys and joking around. I was just like, I just couldn't believe it. And I was still a little bit nervous, but I talked to him a little bit, and he was a super nice guy. And I told him how much of a fan I was, and you know, he was really cool to me. So that was pretty cool, but it was weird to hear him, like, interact with, you know, other players and guys that he played with and joking around and even throwing a couple swear words in there. And yeah, it was crazy. It was pretty cool to see him, though.
So growing up, were you a Grant Fuhr guy then?
I was Andy Moog. Yep. I was a Calgary Flames fan, but Andy Moog was my favorite goalie. That's the first goalie school I ever went to. When I was 11 years old, that's when I switched from being a played out to going in goal was because of Andy Moog. I went to school, and that was it.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason on the line with us. And, Chris, last thing for you here. You mentioned watching Gretzky growing up, all kinds of players to watch in today's NHL, from, you know, McDavid, the Matthews, Ovechkin, Crosby, all these different guys. Who is your favorite player to watch in today's NHL?
You know, those guys are awesome. I mean, you know, they're just so elite, and they're so different. Like, Ovechkin's just, you know, he can just shoot that puck, and he's just a tank out there. He just bowls guys over, and he's just a beast. Crosby's, you know, really methodical, and he slows the game down, and he's just in control of everything. Patrick Kane, you know, that he's got the puck on a string all the time. His head's up. He's always, you know, kind of shifting around, trying to get guys to bite before he, you know, makes a play. And, you know, Connor McDavid, we all know him. He's obviously awesome. But I really enjoy watching Nathan MacKinnon. I think the way that he, you know, uses his speed burst, it's much like McDavid, but he moves his hands so much. He's always quick in his hands, and it's hard for defensemen and goalies to really get a read on him. And, you know, he tries to catch guys in between their crossovers, but his quick hands and the way that he's able to do it at full speed just always impresses me, because not a lot of guys in the league can do that. Even the most elite guys in the league have a tough time keeping their hands moving as fast as MacKinnon when he's going full speed.
Preds TV analyst and noted NHL goal scorer Chris Mason has been our guest here on Morning Drive. See, Mace, thanks as always for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. Stay safe. Take care.
Absolutely. You too. We'll come back and wrap up the show next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson. And, boys, we were talking earlier in the show about the Nashville Best Of bracket that we've put out there today at ESPN 102.5 The Game. The voting is now open on the Jeff Fisher region, so go check that out on Twitter, at 102.5 The Game on Twitter, and cast your vote. And Munson, let's get some updates on how the percentages are going so far, and let's start off with the 1 versus 16 matchup in the Jeff Fisher region between Steve McNair and Ian Clark. What's the vote like at the moment between that matchup?
Well, as you expected, Robbie Stanley, Steve McNair is leading the way, 95% to 5% for Ian Clark.
All right, Ian, got 5% in there.
Well,
okay.
Let me ask you this. If
little
you're like
Belmont
the,
love.
If you're part of the 5% that's voting for Ian Clark on that, are you just doing so to be contrarian? What's going on there?
Yeah, dare to be different.
Well, you may be just a Ian Clark or Belmont basketball devotee, you know. Not everyone in the world likes Steve McNair, but that's probably about right. I mean, it should be 90-something to single-digit something, right?
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, 95% is still a pretty healthy margin if you're Steve McNair, so continue to vote if you're out there listening on the Jeff Fisher region. Marquise, the one right below that McNair, if he wins, would be matched up against is very interesting to me, and I want to see where the vote lies right now. Tomas Vokoun, the 8th seed, the goaltender for the Predators back in their expansion days, against Taylor Lewan, Titans left tackle right now, the 9th seed. Where does that vote stand?
It stands right now at 50-50.
Wow. I'm surprised by that. I thought Lewan would win that one pretty comfortably.
I still think he will, and I will be surprised if he doesn't. But Lewan is... Lewan is one of those guys who his fans are really, really his fans, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I think also there are a lot of Titans fans who aren't huge fans. So it's an interesting – I mean, I think for the most part, Titans fans like Taylor Lewan, the ones who love him will love him. There are some people who are down on him, I guess, and more so like last year when he got suspended and everything. But he is kind of a polarizing guy.
And we did see yesterday Lewan and Will Compton, so the Bustin' with the Boys podcast, weighing in, getting their message out there to campaign for Taylor Lewan on Twitter in this competition. Marquise, the 4 seed, P.K. Subban versus 13 seed Vince Young. Where does that vote stand?
Well, Robbie, there's still a lot of love for P.K. Subban because 72% to 28% for Vince Young.
Poor Vince.
Not surprising there, I don't think. I mean, I think a lot of people view Vince Young's time here, even though like we said earlier, the first year, year and a half was really, really good. I think a lot of people view his time here, especially with like some of the off the field stuff and, you know, chucking the shoulder pads into the stands, everything going on there. Sometimes a very polarizing figure here in Nashville.
Yeah, it seems like he's one of those guys, I'm sure at a certain point in his career, probably had wild popularity, right? Like Derrick Henry right now level popularity. And then the perception of him probably here and really throughout the league changed a lot by the end there.
Marquise, Javon Kearse as the 5 seed, Jay Cutler as the 12. Sometimes we see upsets in the 5-12 matchup. Where does the vote stand in that competition?
Well, so far you ain't going to see it in this one because Kearse is winning 80% to 20 right now.
A landslide for the freak over Jay Cutler so far in the voting.
Poor Jay.
Marquise, the number 6-seeded Shane Foster against 11-seeded Derek Barnett. This is where I'm kind of seeing whether or not there's going to be an upset in this competition. Where does the vote stand?
Well, so far, the vote agrees with you. On the upset, Derek Barnett, 60% to 40% right now for Shane Foster.
Joe, I think that one's going to be close.
Yeah, you know, and you were right to pick that. I mean, I put Foster on my bracket, but that was a good pick by you for an upset because, again, if you're going to come down to something where it's Vanderbilt fans against Tennessee fans, there's just more Tennessee fans. So that's a good upset pick, and I will not be surprised if Barnett advances.
Joe, a guy that we thought could be a dark horse in this region, obviously Steve McNair, the heavy favorite as we look at the Jeff Fisher region. But Keith Bullock, I think, an interesting choice as well. The number 3 seed going up against Ingle Martin, the 14th seed. Munson, where does that vote stand?
Keith is winning by landslide, 97%. So, yeah, there you go. The underdog, not going to win in this
one.
My
final four dark horse right there, Keith Bullock.
Yeah.
That's a good pick, Joe. I really like it. This one is where it gets interesting to me, really interesting. The 7-seeded R.A. Dickey going up against the number 10 seed Ryan Tannehill. Munson, where does that vote stand?
It's a close one, but Ryan Tannehill's leading 51% right now. 51%.
That's very close.
Hey, 7 seeds and 10 seeds, too. A lot of times 10 seeds can get out of that, too, as well. So Ryan Tannehill's in the lead right now.
Joe, maybe an example of recency bias with Ryan Tannehill and his short work with the Tennessee Titans. The number 10-seeded Ryan Tannehill so far, very slight edge over R.A. Dickey.
Hey, who said you have to play a full season to count, you know?
There's Joe Rexroad. He's the analyst that is against Duke right now.
Yeah.
I'm not comparing Ryan Tannehill to Duke, but I'm just saying.
Now, I won't be surprised if Tannehill gets through this one. You mentioned Tannehill, like, there's no way. There's no way if it got to Tannehill, Yossi in the second round, right? There's no way.
You wouldn't think so. I think that would be really naive on the part of the voters if they did that. But we'll see. It's an open competition. Speaking of Roman Yossi, the number 2-seeded Roman Yossi going up against number 15-seeded Chantel Anderson. Munson, where does that vote stand?
It is 97% for Roman Yossi right now.
Okay.
And probably he's going to win that one and move on to the next round.
So we're talking about we got two separate instances in the first rounds. And remember, the voting very early on right now just opened up at 9 o'clock, so you still got your chance to vote in the Jeff Fisher region. But both Keith Bullock and Roman Yossi, the 2 and 3 seeds respectively, operating with a 97% control of the voting right now, Joe Rexroad.
Yeah, no big surprise there. I think of all the matchups, I think the two that are really, really going to be interesting will be Shane Foster, Barnett, but I do feel more and more like Barnett wins, and then certainly the Tannehill-Dickey competition will probably be close. I mean, R.A. Dickey, has a lot going for him, but it's that what's now, what's happening right now, that often matters in these things.
All right, so I'm going to give you 4 options. Who is the biggest threat to Steve McNair in the Jeff Fisher region? Is it Roman Yossi, Keith Bullock, Javon Kearse, or Taylor Lewan?
I think it's Keith Bullock. That would be of those. I think Bullock will beat Yossi in the Sweet 16. So I think it's a Bullock McNair Elite Eight, and you know I'm not picking Bullock to win that, but I think Keith Bullock is definitely a threat as the three seed, no doubt about it.
Munson, who do you think?
Oh, it's Keith. I mean, I could see Preds fans, a lot of Preds fans voting for Roman Yossi, but I don't think he's gonna get Steve McNair. So I think Keith's the closest one.
Do we think the popularity of PK Subban carries him past Javon Kurse if he gets to the second round? If that's the matchup between Subban and Kurse in the second round, the 4 and 5 seeds respectively.
Well, that's a great, even though Subban is a 4, kind of surprised me, but that would be a great 4-5. You usually expect the 4-5 matchups to be really good. That would be really good, really interesting. I think anytime you have Preds, you know, a Pred against a Titan, you know, some voters are all one team or the other, and then some might lean more toward one team or the other. I would pick the Freak to get past Subban, but I think it'd be really close.
Going to be really interesting to see how this competition shakes out. Remember, voting for the Jeff Fisher region of our bracket is open now. Go to 1025 The Game on Twitter and cast your vote. Fellas, that's going to do it for us today here on Morning Drive. Joe, we'll see you again on Thursday.
Sounds good. See you then. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. We'll be back tomorrow morning. Adam Vingan will join me on Morning Drive starting at 6 o'clock. Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 1025 The Game.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.